News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 4th of June, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dan Cole.
I'm Pat Kirchgesner.
Oh, Patrick? I didn't get your last name there, Patrick.
Kirchgesner.
Thank you, Patrick. Are you new or an intern or just like hanging in the booth or what are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm new. I just started a couple weeks ago getting in the reps, you know.
Well, congratulations and welcome.
Thanks.
Is this your first on-air experience here?
Well, not the first. I've been doing a lot of overnights, but some of my first live stuff, so I'm looking forward to it.
There you go. Here we go. You'll be as crazed as Dan is very shortly. You'll see how nuts it gets here. It's 9 minutes after the hour, and we're here with Soundbites. We're going to bring you news, views, stuff you can use, all kinds of interesting and wonderful things will be happening as we go throughout the day here today. I want to start with a fascinating little bit of news that came over the wires this week. There was a couple who went to a store to have their hard drive replaced. It doesn't really matter which store it is because this is clearly not a normal thing for these folks. Obviously, it just happens to be this one store that had this problem. And the company assured them that the computer's old drive, which was loaded with personal information, would be destroyed, they said. Rest assured, they drill holes in it, so it's useless, they said a few months later. The guy got a phone call from somebody in Chicago who said, "My name is Ed. I just bought your hard drive for $25 at a flea market in Chicago."
Oops.
Obviously, this guy's hard drive had, you know, personal information in it, social security numbers, bank statements, investment records. Because of the stuff he found on the hard drive, the guy in Chicago was able to make contact with the couple. He said, "Do you want me to wipe it clean or do you want me to send it to you?" So he said, you know, this guy said, send it to me. I want it in my hands. And the couple alerted the major credit bureaus to protect their information. And the company that was supposed to destroy the hard drive said, and I quote, our company values and places the utmost importance on maintaining the privacy of our customers. We will fully investigate these allegations." Blah, 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 blah.
They probably hire a company to recycle the components.
Yes, it's probably not them. Yeah. It's probably somebody else. And I would certainly hope that a thorough investigation happens and that wherever the problem occurred, it gets fixed. But this is a little bit of information for you folks. If you're going to have a new hard drive put into your system, unless you truly trust the person who's doing it, you watch them drill holes in the old drive. You know,
give them back to the customer. We don't want to have to deal with it.
Or take the drive back yourself.
Yeah.
Take it home, hang it in the driveway, set it down in the driveway somewhere, and take a sledgehammer to it.
50-ton press.
Yep.
Industrial shredder.
That'll do it.
Although I just saw the other night on one of the CSI shows, they were able to put a DVD back together that had gone through the shredder. Enough to read the label on it and figure out what was going on. So they couldn't actually...
Do you think that happens in the real world?
Most likely.
Most likely that's true.
Yeah.
All right, so be careful of that sort of thing. It's important. Our first caller, Phil, from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm calling you about a problem with external firewire drives. I've had this with Panther and Tiger where... If I move large files over, like my entire pictures folder, over, say, 5 gigabytes, after the command is complete, the drive, the external firewire drive, keeps flickering. And if you try to eject it, it tells you it's in use. And I've had that happen with different drives on different
right
computers.
The main reason for that, Phil, is that in every operating system, and it's not just true of the Mac OS, there's some sort of time disconnect between what's really happening and what you see on the screen. Often enough, it says it's done, but it's not. And this is what happens when you're writing to the external drive, right?
Right.
Right. What happens is the internal drive, the machine you're running on, writes all the data out, and it is indeed done. The problem is that what normally happens on a lot of drives is it gets buffered and then written somewhat more slowly. The reason they do that is so that you will get use of your machine back sooner. But it also means that it's not really done writing for another couple of minutes. Depends on how much data, right?
Okay.
But it means that it's not done writing quite yet. And it's done on purpose. They do it to make your... they buffer these data to make your computing experience faster.
So you don't have to wait for it to finish because the computer thinks it's already done and it's left it up to the drives to finish actually transferring the data.
Right. So you've gotten use of your machine back, but you can't quite unplug that drive for another couple of minutes until you see that the activity light has really gone off.
So that's the thing, then. Just wait till it's done.
Just wait till it's done.
Oh, all right. There's nothing to fix that.
No, there's nothing to fix. It is working the way it's supposed to, and it's a feature to give you your machine back faster so you can do other things.
Okay. And that would be true for other drives, like USB drives.
Internal, external, USB, FireWire, everything.
Yeah, because I had it happen also when I was doing a carbon copy cloner.
Yep.
Yeah. That was 37 gigabytes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then that would make sense on a bigger file that would just be longer at the time.
Exactly.
I see. All right, great.
You got it.
Love your show, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Phil.
Bye.
We see a lot of drives these days are coming with a 16-meg buffer, 32-meg buffer. Makes the drive appear faster, but then you don't get to eject it sooner.
Right. And that's great in terms of getting your machine back to play, but not so great in terms of what you said. So, all right. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Oh, well, close it was Tim, but I'll answer
either one. Oh, Tim, Jim.
Oh, yeah, I've been called worse. Don't call me late for dinner.
Yeah. What's your question, Tim? And,
well, I'm totally in a quandary. I'm an amateur photographer of sorts, whatever, and I burn DVDs with, you know, JPEG images to give to friends of, you know, whatever the event was that I happened to photograph. And everything has been going along fine and dandy until about 2 weeks ago. When a dear friend of mine, they had their kids actually organized it, their 50th wedding anniversary. I took a bunch of pictures and burned them DVDs. And lo and behold, he says, oh, gee, we can't, you know, they won't show on our player. And, you know, they worked fine on my player, at least the first one. So I did, take a look at one of the DVDs. We have another player in our bedroom. My wife rents movies at, one of the local chain stores, and that's pretty much all it's ever been used for. And, I get an error message, you know, not a valid disc or something.
Right.
So I was thinking, well, jeepers, maybe, since that player is newer than the one we have in the living room, maybe it's time to upgrade my software. So I went out and I was using Nero, and I upgraded to the latest and everything. Burned another DVD, and it's still the same thing, same problem.
Sometimes it's also the brand of disc. Some players
don't like a certain
brand.
I thought of that, too, and I happened to have... 4 different batches.
Wow. Tried them all.
And now, okay, here's the one other ringer. They are all DVD plus R. Now, I was under the impression that the plus was better than the minus.
Depends on better. Yeah, define better. Minus is much, much more compatible with other drives.
Aha.
Plus is easier to rewrite data onto. So if you want to make sure someone can read your disk, always use a minus.
Okay, well, I guess that's the first thing I'm going to do today is run out and get a batch of those disks and see if it works. You know, I won't mention brand names, but on the one machine here at home that it didn't work on or still doesn't. Whatever.
Well, let me suggest you buy a small batch of those disks
to be on the safe side. You know.
And you also might want to look into the Kodak Gold preservation media. If you're burning 50th anniversary photos or important photos, you want them to be able to last.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago we had someone on from KMP who make the discs now under license from Kodak, that you buy these bundles of discs that are free after rebate, and you get a 20% failure rate right off the bat, and within 6 months, you know, 20% more have failed. That's fine if you're doing casual file copies, but if you're trying to burn pictures, you want to last a while, you want to use a much better name brand disc.
Right. Yep, no, I agree with that entirely. I'm facetious enough to think that my pictures have meaning.
Yeah.
At least they do to me anyway.
Well, it's yep. You and to the people who are... buying your service.
Yep.
Oh, me? I'm retired. I don't take any money for this. I like taking pictures. I do it for nothing.
Well, good for you. That's nifty.
I get a free meal out of it, you know?
Well, there's that, right, yep. Right.
Yeah, when you're retired, you got to watch your pennies.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the classic, work for beer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do that, too, with my lawnmower.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
well,
can,
thank you very much. Yep. I've got something to go do to pursue, see if that solves the dilemma.
All righty.
Right.
And especially the older drives had trouble with pluses, so you know, your system is probably just too new.
Right. All right. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve and Dan and, I'm sorry, Matt.
Pat.
Oh, I'm an idiot. And me, Nick. It's 19 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dan Cole.
I'm Pat Kirchgesner.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Now, before we get back to the phones, there is a new flaw in Microsoft software that could be exploited to cause a denial of service attack on certain applications. Now, of course, Microsoft doesn't feel that's a severe bug. The flaw could be exploited through a buffer overflow attack. We'll be talking more about those later, actually. The user gets lured to a malicious website that has the special URL on it, and bang, they're infected. Microsoft says that it's investigating the flaw, but of course there's no fix out for it yet. So don't go anywhere on the web, and you'll be safe. I can't any longer get excited about saying these things about it. I can't help myself. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. I believe we've got Charlie from Rushford, New York. Welcome, Charlie. What's your question?
Well, a few days ago, my daughter asked me what would make her boyfriend's laptop freeze up, and I said there's about a million reasons, so bring it over and I'd look at it. So
right.
When I booted it up, went down to the start menu and nothing happened. So I booted it up in safe mode, and I managed to get the start menu to work, so I started to put in a disk with SpyBot and Adaware, and I deleted the temporary internet files and cookies, and the CD icon wasn't there.
Right. In safe mode, it doesn't load drivers for the CD or flash drive or network or anything like that.
Okay. Well, I went through and deleted some services, or not deleted, but stopped some services, and went back, and the start button worked, but the DVD driver still wasn't there.
Right.
So I did go in, hooked it up to my home network, downloaded Adaware and SpyBot off the internet, ran that, took out about almost 360 nasty little files.
Right.
And restored the services that I stopped, and the computer works, but the CD isn't there. I went into the device, driver, on the systems, on the control panel.
Right.
And it showed a little asterisk there, or exclamation point. So
yep.
I uninstalled it, installed it, and it came back and told me that Windows had a problem. The driver was either missing or corrupt. So I went through the diagnostic thing that's on the computer, and it tested the CD drive, and I could hear it running, and it worked. And it told me everything was okay. I copied drivers from another laptop over to it. I've uninstalled the ATA.
Did you actually install the drivers or just copy them over?
I copied them over.
Yeah, see, what seems to be happening here, Charlie, is that one of the files that got corrupted was the CD driver file.
Okay.
So you need to uninstall that, then find the original set of drivers, or if it's just a generic drive, remove the driver from the hardware device, right? From the hardware setup in Windows. Reboot the machine and let it refind it and install its own drivers again.
Okay, that's what I did. That still doesn't work.
Might be one of the core drivers in Windows that's corrupted.
It's like, so now you're going to have to reinstall Windows over Windows in the hopes that it will find it.
Okay.
That's what you're going to have to do.
How do I do that without a CD drive?
You're going to have to hook up an external CD drive.
Well, that's only after Windows boots. You should be able to boot a CD from BIOS. You have to boot your Windows CD out of BIOS and then install it to the hard drive.
And that'll work. We got to go. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave N. No Dave N. Right? With Steve and Dan and Pat and Nick and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Brad Davies. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dan Cole.
I'm Pat Kirchgesner.
And you are listening to Soundbites at 32 minutes after the hour. For those of you who've been a little bit confused about why there was no poll this week, it's up now. I apologize. I just fugued out last night. That's all there is to it. All right. There's a new Trojan horse out there, folks. We've seen things like this before, but there's a new one out. It encrypts your data files and then demands a ransom to unlock them again.
You got to admire their gall a little bit.
A little bit, yes. And what it does is it archives the entire My Documents folder with a very long password. Internet hackers are getting a lot bolder in their attempts to steal money from innocent web users. Once your valuable data are locked away, you might be tempted to pay up to rescue your files, but this only, of course, encourages more blackmail attempts in the future. They want about $300 to get your data back. Of course, if you back up every night, you'll have all of yesterday's data unencrypted somewhere to save, but this is pretty bad, so I would make sure that you are definitely protected. It's a bad one. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is, I believe, David from Fairport, New York. Welcome, David. What's your question?
Oh, hi. I have a Mac PowerBook 17-inch. Lately, it's been giving me a message saying that my startup disk is almost full and to clear some memory, and I don't know how to do that, and I haven't been doing anything more to my startup to make it get full.
Well, how much space is free on the disk?
I can't tell you that.
Well, that's the first thing, is you got to look to see how much space you have free and then delete some files.
Right, you're talking about my hard drive disk?
Right.
Yes.
Okay, there still should be plenty of space. I don't have that much data on it, and it's an 80 gig hard drive.
80 is pretty small these days.
So it's just possible that I've filled that up?
Yep. And that's exactly what the error message is telling you, that your hard drive is nearly full and you have to delete some files. Okay. Now you have two choices. You can get an external hard drive and copy some stuff over to it, or you can put a bigger internal hard drive in. Now the external is going to be a little cheaper because you don't have to tear the computer apart to replace the internal drive. And then you end up with two drives. The disadvantage is now that you have an external drive to carry around with a laptop, which is a little annoying.
Right. My question relates also to that, because a while back I got a 250 gig external hard drive at Lacey, and I copied over all of my iPhoto pictures, and there were actually several thousand. Now when I try to access them, if I boot them up off of the external drive, I can bring them up. They come up in preview. When I try to export them back into iPhoto to burn or do something else with, they don't go across as a recognizable data package. So I can bring it up, but when I send it over, it can't read the picture.
I don't follow what you mean by send it over. You should just launch iPhoto, and it should see your photos on the external drive if you did it right. How did you move the photos to the external drive?
Originally, I copied them over onto the external drive.
From where?
From my iPhoto file.
In the pictures library?
In the pictures library.
Well, that was your problem. You can't copy files directly. iPhoto manages them themselves, and it has to copy it for you. If you drag the entire iPhoto library as one single unit, you can then tell iPhoto to use that library on the other disk. So right now it sounds like you have two libraries set up, and you're running out of sync between the two libraries and which photos are in the two different libraries.
I think that's exactly what's happening. Is there a way to fix that and retrieve those other ones?
It depends on how badly out of sync you've taken them already. What you should have done is drag your photo library folder from the pictures folder on the internal drive to the external drive, and then delete them from the internal drive. And then when you launch iPhoto, it will ask you where you moved that library to, and you tell it. Right now, you're going to have to go through each library manually, one file at a time, to see what should be there and what shouldn't be there. Unless you still have the new pictures you've imported in your camera and then can re-import them into the corrected library.
No, I can't do that. Okay, I'll probably just have to do it all individually. Okay.
Okay.
That's helpful. Thank you so much.
Sorry.
Sure.
All right. Bye-bye.
It isn't, you know, for all we taught about how easy the Mac is, there are some things that are not as intuitive as perhaps
could be. We've seen this a little bit with some people that have been in computers a little longer. They don't expect it to be so easy. You want to move your library to another hard drive? Just drag it.
Right,
but if you just want
to move some pictures, that's not the way to do it.
From your library, from your iPhoto window, you drag them to where you want them to go.
Then what? How did he get it wrong?
He probably dragged it from the folder on the hard drive. Then iPhoto doesn't know about the change anymore because iPhoto manages the folder for you.
Okay.
So the computer is trying to be too smart, and you're bypassing the way the program is working, so it doesn't know you've made a change.
All right. I think.
So it's almost too easy for some people. You want a copy of your picture? Drag it to where you want it to go.
And right, that's just the picture. If you want them all and you drag the folder, that can be a problem.
If you drag the folder, that's okay. If you drag individual pictures out of the folder, that becomes a problem.
Didn't you just say dragging pictures is okay? All right.
Out of iPhoto,
we're
going to
take another quick break while one of us figures out what the other one thinks. That may take longer than just a couple of minutes, but we'll do what we can to make sure that something goes on here. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve and Dan and Pat and me, Nick, and just all of you. It's going to be a little love fest here on Soundbites. It's 39 minutes after the hour. I got a whole minute of music here to fill. How exciting is that? All right, I can do this. That's not a problem. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's patchy. Patchy blue skies. We have the little cotton clouds and the beautiful blue sky behind it. We don't see much of that. When we come back, we're going to talk about the poll. We're going to talk about some nifty things. Microsoft is in a snit. I'm shocked at that, of course. Yeah, you never know when that's going to happen. And we're going to talk about some bugs that were squashed in Mozilla and whether or not Vista will run all those games you've been playing for years. We'll talk about all that when we come back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites.
Your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kirchgessner.
And this is Soundbites.
There's that rhythm we've been doing for 16 years.
I know. Dave is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the great Midwest. I'm not quite sure what he's doing. Hopefully he'll be back in a couple of weeks once he gets, you know, that whole face change into the witness protection program. We're not quite sure what he's doing, but he'll be back at some point, I'm sure. Before we get back to the phones, Ubuntu has a new version out. Ubuntu 6.06 LTS, also known as Dapper Drake. LTS stands for long-term service. I'm using it here in front of me. You're soaking in it right now, and it's an excellent distribution. It is already number one on DistroWatch's latest 7-day download tracker. It's available for download for the x86, AMD 64, and PowerPC. There'll also be a version for the T1 UltraSpark from Sun, for those of you who are UltraSpark users.
All three of them.
No, there's a lot of businesses that do UltraSpark in the back room. There are three main installation choices, of course. There's a desktop install, the live install, which they've always had, and the server install. It's a one-touch server install to give you a full LAMP system with Apache and MySQL and PHP and Linux, bang, and you're done. The nice part about it is it's long-term service. 3 years on the desktop, 5 years for servers. If you want to pay for service, you can even do that now. People who are afraid to get free service. $750 a year for servers and $250 a year for desktop. Of course, there's if you pay that, you also get 24/7 phone support in both English and French, possibly simultaneously, although I doubt that. I believe they just you get to pick one when you call. There's a whole lot of community help on board. I've been using it for a while now, and it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat. So you can get free support for 3 or 5 years. You can pay for support if you're a business and you prefer that. It's just a pretty nifty product all the way around. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Connie from Perry, New York. Welcome, Connie. What's your question?
Yeah, well, actually, I've got a slight answer for you for the gentleman who was burning pictures earlier.
Excellent.
And, when my husband burns DVDs, he has one of his burners will not take anything faster than an 8-speed.
Good point.
And if he puts an 8-speed disc, and if he puts a 16-speed disc in, it comes up with an error message.
That could be. Sometimes trying to burn at a slower speed makes discs work better with other drives.
Connie, that's brilliant.
Well, that's for my husband, Steve. We listen to you every week. We've met you a number of times at the computer shows.
Well, thank you, Connie.
And we very much miss your TV show, so we have to go to the Rochester station to get it.
Right.
But, no, that's something that he's come up with. So he's always out scrounging for 8-speed discs. And, like I said, sure. If he puts a 16, inadvertently puts a 16 in that burner, it comes up with an error message, just like that gentleman said.
Thank you, Connie.
So there could be a compatibility issue there.
Yep, that's absolutely right. I agree with you. I don't get an error message, but if I burn it more than 4x on one of my drives, nothing can read it.
And sometimes if you're reading it on a slower drive than you burned it with, it may not work.
Right.
You burn it at 16x and you're trying to read it on an 8x, it may not work.
Brilliant, Connie. Thank you. This is my favorite thing. And that's for Tim Jim there, who called about the burning the DVDs. I love it when our listeners answer the questions for us eventually. Like I said,
tell Steve I finally got to talk to you because I threw him down the Genesee River this morning, and he's a whitewater raft guide with Adventure Calls in Letchworth Park.
Oh, gee, and your husband's out of the house and you're calling us? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to like that.
Well, he'll be thrilled that I got through.
Well, Connie, thank you so much, Connie, and tell him thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
I appreciate it. That's, like I said, that's my favorite part, and it's absolutely true when... Yeah, every DVD player is a little different, and it's not just the player, it's also your machine. How fast is your system? How much RAM do you have? What are you running in the background? What's it doing while you're doing all of that? You can't necessarily tell until you've played with it.
And sometimes the cheaper the drive, the less compatible it can be with other discs.
Right.
So if you get a really cheap player, I rented that at home. I bought a $20 DVD player for the back bedroom because I don't need a good player back there. I have a lot of trouble playing some discs because it's
right.
a $20 player.
Right.
I have to go to the $30 player.
Right. We had an off-air caller who can't seem to download Stinger. It doesn't seem like it's working. I haven't looked yet today. Of course, we're talking about part of the Security Tango at SecurityTango.com. There's a whole bunch of interesting stuff that's available there. If you click on the Let's Dance button, you can follow the Tango all the way down. One of the things to do is to download a product called Stinger. And Stinger has a number of different versions. Now here's version 2.6.0. It doesn't do me a lot of good to download this because, of course, I'm running Linux. But I can, in fact, download it. So if you're having a problem downloading it and there is an error message, you'd need to call us back and tell us what that error message is because without that information, there's not much I can help you with because we do indeed have it working here. The download works fine, so I'm not entirely certain what the problem is.
It might be a point to back up a step for some of our newer listeners, and that I run into this a lot with people. How do I download something from the internet? Well, usually you just click the link and it downloads. After it downloads, you have to decompress it. After you decompress it, you have to install it.
Right.
So there's several stages involved in actually getting something to work after you want to download it.
Right. In the process of downloading it, most browsers will ask you where you want to put it. Pay attention to what you tell it, because that's where it's going to put it. Some put it right on the desktop, which is kind of silly. You'd want to move it off the desktop.
You know where it is right off the bat.
Right, but you don't want it cluttering that. So once you're done, and once it's downloaded, then you want to double click on that file, and that should install it at that point.
Well, you may have to decompress it first.
Right,
and then
zip.
Double click on the decompressed file to actually run the install.
Right. So it can get a little more confusing than that. But you do want to check out the Security Tango at securitytango.com. Click on the Let's Dance button. That'll lead you through the whole tango. After you're done with that, check out my blog. There's a Nick's blog button. It's the third one down. And I've been doing some blogging about security and how I feel about various thises and that. It's sporadic, but I've been doing some stuff. Listen, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
We got to run.
We got to run, exactly. Got to run with Steve and Dan and Pat and me, Nick, on Soundbites 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Soundbites. Nick unfortunately thought this was our news break and ran to get some coffee. So, Nick, we're back on the air. This wasn't the long break. So, hot, fresh coffee for Nick.
Well, I'm feeling better. How are you?
Don't!
I apologize. I clearly need better drugs today. I'm getting a little nuts here.
Probably because he's sitting on his microphone.
I'm sitting on the earpiece. That's good. All right, we're... I can't believe that. I completely fugued out. Why didn't you let me just walk out the door?
Well, it didn't strike me that you didn't know what time it was.
I apparently didn't know what time it was. Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care? All right, our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Gary, I apologize for walking out on you.
That's okay. I have a question. I purchased a Sony camcorder and was interested in putting it to DVDs. However, I noticed that I believe in the process. I need to put it to the hard drive, and then from the hard drive, burn it to the DVD. So the camcorder runs for 10 minutes and stops. Will not let me go to the hard drive any more than 10 minutes. I've gone to the Sony website. I've done some picking around trying to figure out why. Went back to the store where I purchased it. They, of course, are reconsidering their employment options, I think, at some of the discount stores. And so I'm a little befuddled. One, why the camcorder would run only for 10 minutes, if anybody's ever heard of anything like this before. It's a fairly new and running mini DVDs.
What software are you using to capture the video with?
The Picture Pal, I think, is the name of it that comes with it.
The problem is the 2 gig file limit. 2 gigabytes of file space is about 9.5 minutes of DV.
Oh.
So when you get to 9.5 minutes, 2 gigabytes is the largest single file that that many systems can handle. So it has to stop recording because it's exceeded that 2 gigabytes.
Well, now that's the first thing that made any sense that I've heard of. Perfect.
There you go.
Is there a solution, or what should I be doing, or what should I not bother doing?
Look in your software for something called clip detection. The way most software works is it will start a new clip, which is a new file, every time you hit pause or stop on your camera. So it breaks it down into 2 gigabyte chunks. If you just have an hour of straight video where you never paused, you're going to have to break that up in your camera, or hope that get better software that can automatically start a new clip at the end of that 9 minutes before it just aborts.
Okay, and with that, though, of course, if I'm running mini DV tape on long play, which is 90 minutes, in order to put that on a DVD, I would probably need some special software for the DVD burning to compress it.
Right, you need DVD authoring software to convert your DV into MPEG-2, which is the format that that DVDs use. And I'm more familiar on the Mac software with iMovie and iDVD, but probably the Roxio Easy DVD Creator has that type of compressor built into it.
And just to make it short, approximately how much time do you think I could squeeze onto one DVD?
Depends on how bad you compress it. You get about an hour per disc with nominal compression. Hour and a half with not too bad compression, 2 hours with a little worse compression. So the more you compress it, the more time you fit on the disc, but the lower quality the video is. That's why a lot of the commercial DVDs are dual layer, so it can put an hour per layer to get a two-hour movie on a disc at relatively low compression, so you get relatively high quality.
Gotcha. And that dual layer is something that most DVDs that we purchase can or some can do, I
DVD
guess?
Players can do dual layer. That's sometimes called DVD 9. With DVD recorders, we're only now starting to see commercial consumer-level DVD recorders coming out. And they'll have a DL or dual layer identifier in their product name. And that would be the 8.4 gig discs. The single layer discs are 4.7 gigs.
Gotcha.
Now, are you using, what operating system are you running?
XP.
Are you running it under NTFS? You don't know.
Can't answer that question. Don't know.
All right.
That could be the FAT32 2-gig limit.
Right. All right, listen, we're going to take another quick break. This is really the break where Rob is going to come in, and Rob Jason is going to come in and do the weather and the stuff like that. But I've already got my coffee, so
the
I'm just going to sit
Rob
back
Jason.
And... And I know the newly shorn, looking clean and lean, Rob Jason. He's going to be in to do all the important stuff, and we're going to take a quick break while I try to figure out where I lost 4 minutes of my life, having left a little early, and then we'll be back on the other side of all of that with Steve and Dan and Pat and me, Nick, and each and every one of you. We're going to talk about the poll, and we're going to talk about securing Vista. We're going to talk about Mozilla squashing bugs. We will talk about whether or not Vista can run your games and all the other cool stuff at 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites, the greatest computer show in the known universe, only on the greatest radio station, 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Well, I guess I'll go get some coffee. Oh, wait, we're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kirchgesner.
And this is Soundbites. And really, I think I'll just sit here for the next hour. That's probably best. Got a couple of people on the line, but before we get to them, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website. That's soundbites.org, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Now, I admit that, except for this week, came up a little late, but it did come up, and that's really the important part. It's up and running even as we speak. Last week's poll, we talked about Tony Beauvais and his book, Just Say No to Microsoft. He was a guest on the show, and he was terrific, and we made the poll. I've said no to Microsoft with the winner, three or more applications. Thank you all. Unfortunately, that's followed by nothing. 25% have three or more applications. 22% have nothing. 19% have changed to Linux. Or have been running Linux all along, 16% two applications, 10% the Macintosh, and 7% one application. 269 of you voted, making it number 179 in the all-time hit list. Thank you all very much. This week's poll, which came up just a tiny bit late, we have a lot of people have been writing about the Windows Genuine Advantage. They've been getting a pop-up. That it tells them the Windows Genuine Advantage wants to run, and is that good for you? And people don't know what it means or what it's about. Well, the Windows Genuine Advantage program was initiated by Microsoft to require users of Windows to validate their copy of Windows, of various versions of Windows, when accessing several Windows media Windows services such as Windows Update and downloading from the Microsoft Download Center. Previously, this was voluntary, but it's unfortunately become mandatory. When a user installs the WGA, it adds an Internet Explorer add-on entitled Windows Genuine Advantage. The basic idea is, of course, that Microsoft believes everyone's a pirate and they've stolen their copy of Windows. So if the WGA determines that your copy of Windows was pirated, even if the CD appears to be genuine, there could be problems. If the CD does appear to be genuine, Microsoft will supply the user with a new PC.
And how does it tell?
I
because you already have to activate Windows through the Internet with Microsoft when you install it.
Yeah.
So how does it reactivate or something? Maybe?
I have no idea. People who don't have a valid CD can buy one. Microsoft is nice enough to sell them one. Microsoft has appeared to decide that authentication should be mandatory for security updates as well as for optional software. So beginning on April 25th of this year, Microsoft began distributing the Windows Genuine Advantage notification as a critical update to millions of Windows users. Users with unofficial copies are exposed to alerts at startup, login, and during some uses of Windows itself, stating they do not have a genuine copy. The same is true for the Microsoft Office Genuine Advantage program. The thing is, this program inspects all of your hardware and software and then decides whether or not you're a legitimate owner or a lousy, no-good, scum-sucking thief. Physical evidence of ownership's like that holographic label that came with your Windows serial number on it. Yeah, they don't care about that. The scanner, unfortunately, that they use is not always accurate. In particular, the more you've changed the hardware in your system, the greater the chances are that the verification program will incorrectly conclude that you have pirated your copy of Windows. If the scanner does decide you are a low-down, no-good, scum-sucking pirate, it permanently bans your system from ever receiving critically important Microsoft security patches in the future. And, of course, as we all know, you need those big time. The absence of updates like that typically amounts to basically a slow death sentence for Windows, since it results in a lot of infections of malware that's so severe your system simply stops working. Obviously, that's actually preferable to doing any work with it when it's so badly infected. But still, that's neither here nor there. So those of you who have been seeing, and I've been getting a lot of phone calls and a lot of email about that, and basically it's Microsoft's new way of finding out who the pirates are and punishing them severely. So our poll...
One of the problems that we've read about in the past is less than scrupulous dealers who will bundle a whole bunch of free software to make a computer give it more incentive to buy a computer from them. And most of that software is pirated. They just throw a copy on it, don't give you any disks or serial numbers, so it may not be the end user knowingly being a pirate.
I understand that, but they're the people who get gigged for it.
Yeah.
So that's a real problem. So that's what this week's poll is about. Have you seen that genuine advantage warning? So far, 37 of you voted, 41% yes. Of course, those of us who are using Linux or the Macintosh are just laughing up our sleeves at this moment. And for those of you who are not, now might be the time to think about it. When you're done with the poll, take a look at the little yellow box underneath it. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It takes you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. And you can then leave in a little message about dealing with the genuine advantage warning, because I know that just clicking on a button isn't enough for you folks. When you're done, please take a look around at my website, asknick.com. I put out a newsletter 3 times a week with all kinds of nifty and interesting stuff in it. You might be interested in that. Then come back to the Soundbites website and check out the forums where the niftiest people in the world hang out and play all day long. It's a very cool thing.
We should apologize for the problems on the website and archive site this week.
The archive site is back up as of this moment. We moved our offices at work, and it's the subnet we were on was not running correctly in terms of DNS services. People couldn't find it on the Internet. It's back up, but somewhere in the up-down of getting it to work, the web server didn't come back up on the archive box, but it's up now, so Steve will or has already,
I already have. Last week's show was there and waiting because the FTP server worked. So.
Right, but right, it wasn't showing up. But it's showing up now, and everything is fine. So those of you who have been desperately waiting for last week's show can get it, and then this week's show will be up sometime this week, and we'll all be back on track again. I apologize. I could get to it from work, so I set it up. I made sure it was running. It worked fine. What I didn't think about was the fact that just because I could get to it didn't necessarily mean the rest of the world could. But it's all up and running now. We're going to go back to the phone, and we're going to talk to Diane from Gates, New York. Welcome, Diane. What's your question?
Well, I went into my Quicken today, and I have two little back in again, and see what happens. And if it still does the same thing again, I mean, I wrote out a check for $300, and it added $800 in. I thought that was great.
Right.
But what am I going to do here? It's crazy.
Well, I would start with checking. What operating system are you running?
XP.
All right. Check.
And what version of Quicken is it?
2005, and it's brand new. It's not like, you know.
Well, the 2006 is the current version with at least a patch 3 or 4.
Well, it's 2005. I had bought it when I bought the new machine. My machine's only 6 months old.
That's pretty old for a computer these days.
Well, yeah, but yeah.
Don't get smart, guys.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Well, tell my husband that, because that's all he'd need to hear.
You may want to check to see if you need any of the patches for Quicken. They release patches for older versions almost every month,
uh-huh.
and this may be a fix that it knows. That has been fixed.
I'm
with
surprised
the
Quicken people didn't tell her that, though.
Well, they
try to get you to buy 2006?
No.
That's even more surprising.
No, the girl I had was excellent. She was very good at trying to get me around the world here, and we went back and forth. We were doing it through email, and when she told me to go up into file and go to backup, because I backup all the time, plus I have that other backup thing you do.
Right.
And it wiped everything out up to 5.9, and it was like, oh, my God.
Here's another question, Diane. How full is your machine?
Not very full.
Okay.
No, I've only had it 6 months, and I don't put a lot of stuff on it. And, you know, it was just, but then when I go in and don't even see it reconciled for what would it be, actually April and May, you know, how they do it, it drove me crazy.
Well, it should.
I mean, now I've got to go through 5.9 up to, you know what I'm saying, today's date. I don't even know how much money I got in there now.
There are a couple of viruses that affect Quicken, the W95.MTX and a couple of others. I would suggest two things.
Uh-huh.
First, dance the Security Tango. Go to securitytango.com.
SecurityTango.com.
That's all one word, Security Tango.
Uh-huh.
Click the Let's Dance button, print out that page, and go step by step by step. Don't skip any. Now, this is going to take a good part of your day.
I will, thank you.
But when you're done, you should have a pretty doggone clean system. Make sure then, toward the bottom, it talks about making sure your antivirus is up to date and making sure that you've loaded a firewall and all the blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
Make sure you've done all of that.
Uh-huh.
When you're done, then run Quicken again and see if it works correctly. Because it's very possible you got one of the Quicken viruses.
Okay.
I'd have to start there because I'm thinking that's the most likely possibility.
Well, she made a remark that it sounded like it was corrupted.
There you go.
Yeah, a corrupted data file is also a possibility,
yes.
And that's one of the reasons you want to make sure your backups are working. So everyone using Quicken, go into your preferences and see what the backup is set to. I've seen some people have it set to every 10 times I run it. It should be set to every time I run it.
I thought, you know, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I have never gone in there because mine has always been, it pops on, you know, with the backup.
Right.
And I say, and I click it, yeah, backup, you know, back it up every time. And that's,
we can also tell it how many backups to keep. So in case one of your backups corrupts, you can go to the next previous backup.
Right. Mm-hmm. So definitely set all that up, run the Tango, and then let us know what happens.
I was ready. I'm ready to cry. I've been at this since 8 o'clock this morning.
I'm sure. But run the Tango. Check your backups and see what happens.
Okay.
Okie doke. Good
I
luck, Diane.
It. Thank you very much.
Thank you. People depend on things like Quicken, and when they're not running right, that's hard. That's very hard. We've seen that with a number of products recently that changes that have been made to the products will cause them to not read the old versions, or when you get a corruption, it's very hard to figure out what it is. The other thing she could, of course, try is doing a repair to Quicken if there's a feature for that, or reinstalling it over itself and
rebuilding the data file.
Rebuild the data file.
Now, Intuit will rebuild it for you for quite a fee, but
quite a fee, or you can do it yourself. So those are all things to try, Diane. I'm afraid that the folks who know best about it, of course, are the folks from Intuit. So you should definitely follow the advice of that person you got via email. They do offer good support. So the important thing is to keep at it and keep with them about that. We're going to take another quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve, with Pat, with me, Nick, and with each and every one of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that is, of course, Soundbites, right here on 1180 WHAM.
AM. Computer talk you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
And indeed, he actually is here. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Pat Kirchgesner.
And this is Soundbites. We're, I'm here. I was confused, but I'm here. Before we get back to...
Just throws us off when Dave isn't here.
It throws us off when Dave isn't here. It throws us off when I just walk out the door in the middle of the thing. AOL has restored their email after a glitch. AOL fixed a major problem that affected tens of millions of email users worldwide for several hours on Thursday. Unfortunately, what caused the snarl remains a bit of a mystery to AOL. Some sort of software glitch tripped their email system around 11 a.m. Eastern Time, causing delays in the sending and delivery of messages for about 5 hours. This little glitch affected both paying subscribers and free webmail users from a variety of AOL services, including AOL itself, CompuServe, and Netscape. CompuServe is still around. How cool is that? As well as the mail service provided to users of the AIM Instant Messaging Network. Here's the problem. They don't know what caused it, so they can't really fix it.
Oops.
You can't fix what you don't know what happened. But they are looking into it. Rest assured, they've got one low-paid employee still trying to figure out what the heck went on. No, I'm sure they're looking at it very hard and very seriously, because there's a million different companies out there who are offering free email. Gmail's doing it, Hotmail's doing it, Yahoo's doing it, everybody's doing it. You can get email any one of a million places, and AOL knows that they don't keep people if they don't do a good job with their mail. So
there,
so I'm
many
sure
people moving over to broadband, high speed internet. AOL's dial up is falling back.
Right, right. So we'll see what happens. Our next caller is Lee from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lee. What's up?
Hi. How you guys doing today?
Good.
I've been running your tango for a while here, and I listen to the show whenever I can.
Thank you.
I've got an issue with I have a Frontier DSL for my
good for you,
per your recommendation.
Thank you.
And I run Thunderbird for my mail and Firefox, of course, for my browser. I guess it was last Tuesday they made some switch to the Frontier. I spent an hour. I read their email that they sent out warning everybody about the changes, and
good.
I went through and did everything that was suggested for Thunderbird, and everything was working fine until Tuesday morning. I think it was Tuesday morning, and all of a sudden I can receive mail, but I cannot send mail. I spent an hour on the line with their tech guy, and he finally said, well, geez, it looks like you might have to not use Thunderbird. And I jokingly said to him, looks like I might not have to use FrontierNet if I can't use my Thunderbird. and the funny thing is, we have three different accounts. We have the main account, and then I have one for my business, and my wife has her address, of course.
Right.
And I'll send something from our main one to my business one to test it, and it'll show up in the inbox of the business account, and it'll say undelivered mail returned to sender. And I'll open it up, and what it is it's the mail that I sent, the test from the main account to the business account, but it didn't get returned to the main account. It was delivered to the return or the business account.
Does it say why it was returned?
Oh, it says undeliverable. Here, let me open it up.
Because sometimes in there's a little more detail about why it couldn't deliver it.
Your message is being returned to you. Let's see here. Well, what it is, it says my AVG email scanner program, I'm sorry to inform you, your message return could not be delivered to one or more of the destinations. And it was, it wasn't returned to where I sent it from. It was returned to where I sent it, which is odd. And the same thing happens if I send it to the wife's account. Now, if I send it from the business account to the main account, it comes back to the business account undeliverable.
And you've gone through the steps to set Thunderbird to authenticate SMTP mail sending.
Right. I went into, account settings, added, what they said to add to it. And like I said, the tech support guy at Frontier was pretty much pulling his hair out. He says, geez, it shouldn't do that.
Okay, there's a couple of things. Yeah, it shouldn't. Because I use Thunderbird every day on DSL, and it runs great.
Yeah, I never had a problem with it until,
Let me suggest a couple of things. One of the things that I see all the time is people typing a comma instead of a period. Somewhere in one of the names, either the server or your email address or something else. I see it constantly, and you've got to have a sharp eye to see it on most machines because, everybody's got their system set down small, so it's hard to see the difference between
comma
and period.
Yeah, sometimes deleting the whole field and retyping it slowly.
Okay. Slowly.
And the other one I see a lot is STMP instead of SMTP.
Right.
Reversing the letters because it doesn't sound like a real word, so you can't help but misspell it.
Okay. People who don't put the @frontiernet.net in their username, you require that now.
Or frontier.net instead of frontiernet.net.
Yeah, that was the main change that we went through, and like I said, we did this.
And making sure they spelled Frontier correctly, but every once in a while I see somebody put an EI instead of an IE.
Right. That's all the same.
You've checked all of that 3, 4, 10 times.
Yes, we did. I went to the Thunderbird forums.
Right.
First time I'd been there, and a couple of people suggested I go to Zone Alarm and try. I use Zone Alarm as my firewall and try to change things there and even turn it right off.
Temporarily turn it off for a minute.
Yeah,
you also mentioned your AVG email scanner. It tried disabling that temporarily because what happens is your mail program sends out your email.
Right.
Your antivirus stops it to scan it and then continues sending it. So your email program may think it's been sent, but your antivirus hasn't been able to send it, so it doesn't make it back to your email saying I couldn't send it. It just sort of gets lost in limbo.
Right, and check to see if AVG is set up correctly, if it requires any sort of stuff like that. But try turning that off before you send it.
Turning them AVG and the Zone Alarm off?
And see if it sends it. And then turn one on and send it, and then turn the other on and send it, then turn both on and send it. That'll at least tell us where the problem is.
Okay.
I'm afraid there is a little bit of troubleshooting you've got to go through before we can really figure out what the deal is. But
yeah. Well, by looking at the forums, it seems like I'm not the only one that's having this problem.
What version of Thunderbird do you have? Did you get the latest?
Well, as a matter of fact, they had 1.0, and this morning while I was listening to you guys, I installed 1.5, I think.
Yeah.
Well, 1.5 came out several months ago. 1.504 came out last week.
Yeah, that's the one. I just installed it an hour and a half ago, and it didn't make any difference.
and that's set up correctly.
Yeah.
Well, try those things. First, try the firewall, then try the antivirus, then try both.
Okay.
Also, check everything to make sure you've spelled everything correctly and you have no commas.
Okay.
And then let us know. I'm afraid this requires eyeballs on the system, so you may be taking it to somebody at this point.
Oh, great.
I'm sorry.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck.
Give it a try. Thanks a lot.
In fact, I like I said, I've got DSL. I actually had to change my wife's email program from one that she has used for a long time and loves, but it's not handling any new features. I've been trying to get it upgrade forever, and this finally was the straw that broke my back.
Yeah, and we should remind people again that if you are using Frontier Internet Service, they are making changes in the way you send email, that you have to turn on authenticated mail sending, and they have instructions on their websites for how to do that, and we have a link to that on our link list. And especially for business users, if you're using business Frontier but with your own mail servers, you may not remember that you had a Frontier username and password. So you have to change all of your computers to send through Frontier's email server, even though you're receiving from your own corporate business server.
Right. All right, our next caller is Denny from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Denny. What's your question?
Oh, it's Benny from the Jurassic part of Parenton. I'm standing here in my bib overalls, and my knees are quaking about going from dial-up to Frontier DSL. I have a Mac G4, which now is becoming an antique, a laptop. And, you know, am I going to go crazy by going to 256K and have all the bells and whistles? I mean, I'm just terrified of the idea of leaving the home mother.
Yeah, right. Well, the good news is you don't necessarily have to. I mean, you can keep both for a month and see if the other one works for you. You've always got the backup going back.
Oh, great. I can have a knife switch between both the lines, right?
Right.
Well, and even for those people on broadband with Frontier or Time Warner, they both offer dial-up service for when you're away from your house. We get this question quite often. I've got broadband at my house, but what happens when I go on vacation? Well, you can use Frontier dial-up or Time Warner dial-up if you have the high speed at your home.
Let
as
me
well.
Just put you at ease, Denny. In the words of Groucho Marx, aside from the improvement, she'll never notice the difference. The basic thing is this. When you hook up DSL, particularly if you're already on a Frontier account, the only difference is you'll be faster.
Okay.
In terms of where you get your mail, that'll remain the same. Now, you've got that interesting one feature that you've got to set up authenticated sending. But once you're past that, and it's not a hurdle, it's just one little thing to do. But once you're past that, it's pretty much smooth sailing. The system hooks up via Ethernet, so you're always online. You're always available. You don't have to worry about dialing in. You don't have to worry about a slow speed. You don't have to worry about getting cut off if somebody sends you a fax. You don't have to worry about noise on the line. You don't have to worry about anything. It just runs all day.
You do have to make one change in your network system preference, and you have to drag the Ethernet connection on top of the dial-up connection. So it looks
they're in that order.
Right, so it looks at your Ethernet first and then dial-up if it can't find Ethernet.
How is there the modem? Is that really cool? It has a router.
It's so cool.
And I can use my little 2.4 gigahertz thingy on the laptop and maybe go around the house
without
wires.
You can optionally get a wireless router on top of the DSL router.
That's what they're offering.
They're offering a combined unit at probably a monthly fee. Take
no,
a look at.
I don't know. I have Frontier phones, obviously, and
right.
They're saying it's going to cost me an extra $8 a month. It shouldn't cost. It's it's like a shell game, and then if I bail out, it's $200.
And if you add long distance services, they have a lot of.
But
different
you're not
going to
want to bail out.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. You're gonna if you get the wireless connection.
Is this one of the best things you think I could do to myself? By going to Frontier DSL.
You're
going to
be five times faster than what you were.
Well, and getting off of dial-up, you won't have dropout problems, connection issues. It'll be a whole lot faster. And that's one of the questions that we have been getting, that Frontier does have cheaper services. They have a 250.
This is the 256 line.
Right, they have a 256K line, which is five times faster than your 50K modem, which you probably only got a 20K connection anyway.
No, 44K.
40, that's 48. Even, yeah, so you're getting faster connections. Both Time Warner and Frontier have even faster connections at higher fees. But most people, 256 is fine.
Yeah, and you'll love it. I say go for it. Get that modem. Get the wireless router from them. You can hook a couple of machines up locally with wire, and then have the wireless for wandering around the house. You will be thrilled. I highly recommend it. We're going to take a quick break. Back with Steve and Pat and me, Nick, in just a couple of minutes. We will talk about Vista for Games. We'll talk about a couple of other things And we'll get back to more of your phone calls on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM.
What? Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Well, no, not Dave Enright this week, but we do have Nick Francesco.
And Steve Ray.
And Pat Kirchgesner.
And this is Soundbites at 42 minutes after the hour. Microsoft dropping PDF from Office. Microsoft's new version of Office, which is about to come out, had an option in the beta to save documents in PDF format. Adobe Systems threatened to take them to court. Now, that wouldn't have been a big deal because Microsoft always wins in court, except Adobe, of course, threatened to take them to court in Europe, where Microsoft doesn't always win. They also are offering, they're also removing a feature to save their own documents in XML paper specification, which XPS, which is their rival format to PDF. Adobe raised concerns over Microsoft's plans to offer a save as PDF feature in the Office 2007 suite. Users who purchase the final version of Office 2007, which is due out later this year, have to separately download some free software to save documents in the PDF or XPS format.
Or purchase the Acrobat suite the way Adobe wants you to do.
Well, because you're right, Adobe wants you to do that. Now, what's interesting, of course, is that OpenOffice users have always been able to save as PDF.
And so do Mac users.
And so
although
Mac users.
It's a quick and dirty PDF, not a press-ready PDF. Which matters in the pre-press community where the Mac has got a strong foothold.
Right. Yeah. But for most users,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you want a quick and dirty one because you're going to email it to somebody.
Right. The big thing is Adobe says that while Microsoft is an important partner for them, the company remains concerned about their monopolistic practices. And of course, we've seen this a million times. They partner with somebody and then offer something rival that eventually they make sure takes over one way or another. So Adobe is doing what they can, and they've got their act together by suing them out of the United States, where they have a better chance to win. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Couple things. One quick, that gentleman regarding the problems with his mail with Frontier, I'm going through the absolute same frustration. I have used my spell checker on my mail program to make sure everything's spelled correctly, and there is just not working yet. So I'm sending my mail through one of the other supplier or services that we use, but I have had no success in getting the Frontier to work. And what's funny is that when I include the at frontiernet.net, it works even worse. I get more error messages. I can't even connect to the incoming server when I do that.
One of the error messages isn't wrong username or password, is it?
No.
Because you need, the thing that I was thinking about afterwards was that you need to use the main account name.
Correct.
And not any of your sub accounts.
Correct. And I happen to only use on my Frontier, only use one account. There is no sub accounts.
You know, we're going to talk to the Frontier folks and get back to people on this.
It's crazy, and this has been going on for weeks.
Yeah.
I've been dry. And what's funny is that we use other providers, which come to find out Frontier, what we're hearing in the background, provides services for their competitors here in town.
Right.
That if I'm sending through on one of our other mail servers, which happens to go through one through Virginia, another one through Atlanta, I can't even send to someone who is a Roadrunner customer here in Rochester because we come to find out that Frontier provides those services for
them. Frontier, another one of Frontier's anti-spam policies is they block port 25 on your network.
Right.
So you cannot run your own internal mail server, and you must send mail through Frontier's mail server when you're using Frontier DSL. Now, you can get onto webmail and send mail through any service.
Without a problem.
Without a problem.
The other primary reason I was calling was, is there any easy way, or do I need to do some purchasing to create an Adobe Acrobat form to allow someone to fill in fields? I seem to be stuck in that area. I purchased Adobe Acrobat, the basic version.
Yeah, standard or pro. That might be a pro feature.
Standard, and happen to know that some of our vendors use PDF-type files, which allow us to fill in fields for them and not touch the main document. And I said, that's cool. I would really like to be able to do that, but I haven't been able to figure out how.
Yeah, we're trying
you need,
to...
I think you need InDesign for that, right?
Well, InDesign is a layout program. There's a way... What you have to do is make a form and save it as an editable PDF, and that might be one of the differences between Acrobat Standard and Acrobat Pro. I'm trying to bring up that differences list myself from Adobe's website.
And what I thought was that when you make an editable PDF, then people can actually edit the primary words and fields and characters that you already have on there, which you don't want touched. You only
want to fill out a form.
Fill out a form.
There used to be a whole forms generation industry that sort of died off.
It sure did.
Yeah.
Disappeared.
That's an interesting question. I always thought it was the pro version that did that, not the standard version. But you said you had the pro.
No, I have the standard.
Oh, well, there you are. There you are then. I think that's the problem. I don't think standard does it.
Gotcha.
Somewhere on their website, and I'm trying to find it myself, they have a list of the differences between Pro and Standard. And there's even a lower version called Acrobat Elements for Windows that's available to enterprise users.
I would like to make a request if anybody's listening in the government circles that vendor or these manufacturers put on the boxes what their software won't do.
I like it.
Well, a lot of them will tell you what you can't use their software for. It's kind of interesting. You read product licensing, and there's restrictions about using them in hospitals because if someone dies, they don't want to get sued.
Right.
Using them on airplanes or nuclear plants and things like that because they don't want life or death issues being used with their software.
We absolutely need it listed as to what their software won't do because you need to read between the lines before you spend hundreds of dollars to find out that what you just purchased won't work anyway.
That's absolutely true.
It's horrible.
And I'm very impressed with that idea.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's great. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. I love that idea. Let's start a grassroots movement and get these people to tell us what their software won't do. Of course, that could be a long list. Won't do the dishes. But
won't,
won't paint
won't
my house.
Won't do Windows.
Won't do Windows. That's often a feature.
Won't do Windows Vista.
Right. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. I've been teasing you all day with it. I promise you, when we come back. We will talk about whether or not games will run on Vista. Beta 2 is out, and and that's theoretically mostly feature complete. So we should be able to test that, shouldn't we?
We should.
We should, and we'll let you know what the results of those tests were. When we come back, we've got Steve, and we've got Pat, and we've got me, Nick. And we've got each and every one of you. We've got a couple of people on the line, and we'll be back with the greatest computer show in the known universe. Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow. Now back to Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
That's Steve Ray.
And there's a couple of guys in the booth who apparently have fugued out even worse than I did in the first hour. It's this time of day. You see what happens? You fugue out when it's 7 minutes before the hour, and that's when it happens.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
We have an answer for our previous caller.
Yay!
You need to purchase the Adobe Lifecycle Reader extensions, which activate hidden functionality in the Acrobat Reader when a person gets your document that you can do forms. Unfortunately, I can't find a price on their website, which is disconcerting.
It is a tad disconcerting.
But I put a link to the product on our website. So it's the Adobe Lifecycle Reader extension. Cost-effectively extend document-based processes outside of your organization. Fill in forms, and IRS forms are one of their examples.
Wow, cool. All right. Vista, will it run your games? Beta 2 is out. Historically, when you hit Beta 2, it should be feature-rich and stable enough. Testers can use it all day, every day. A bunch of companies, including one called Extreme Tech, have picked up on it and started playing with it and seeing what it'll do. And they've taken a look at compatibility and performance issues, and especially for gaming, which, of course, is one of the big selling points of Vista. So they took a bunch of games, including World of Warcraft, Splinter Cell, Chaos Theory, Oblivion, Half-Life 2, Steam, Battlefield 2, Civilization 4, Sims 2. So they went Call of Duty 2, Rise of Legends, Grand Theft Auto, Ghost Recon. There appear to be a couple of fairly big problems with the Beta 2 release. Now, again, these could be fixed by the end, but you expect the Beta 2 to be fairly full. The first is, of course, Star Force copy protection. A lot of games are copy protected with a product called Star Force. This expects to find a hidden driver, a Ring Zero driver, which causes a compatibility problem with Vista, which prevents the games using Star Force copy protection from loading. The second big problem, and you knew this was coming, is performance. There is a performance drop associated with running games under Vista. Apparently, it varies from game to game, but it seems as though turning on anti-aliasing and anisotropic filtering causes the biggest performance problems. If you're a gamer, that meant a lot to you, and we have a link to the Extreme Tech article. Steve will put that up in just a minute, and you'll be able to decide whether or not Vista's for you. Of course, in many ways, you don't get a decision, because you're going to have to get it eventually, whether you like it or not. In the meantime, we're going to go to the phones, where Jim from Leroy is patiently waiting. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, in the past, you've mentioned problems with Norton 2006. I was wondering, is there any indication that that's been repaired?
Not yet. The problem is these things are fairly slow. We have commented that the entire suite of Norton has had a few problems here and there. We haven't seen any updates or fixes from them that would indicate that they have made changes to the product yet.
Well,
no.
Part of it is creeping featureitis. They keep adding more and more features to try to upsell to other people, that the program does so much that it bogs your system down too bad.
Right.
And that probably won't ever get fixed until they break out some of their products. So you can buy Norton Antivirus, but don't buy Norton Suite, which adds all the other stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I think probably I'll just renew the 2005 and let it go with that.
Well, no, you don't want to do that. You want to go with another product. You want the latest and greatest. So you might want to take a look at AVG, which is a free product.
Oh, okay.
And
all
that,
right.
And that works great for me, and yet it's, like I said, free, and you don't have to worry about paying for updates.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, they're rocking on in the booth right now, the two of them together. They look like either the Beavis and Butthead or the Smothers Brothers of rock. I'm not sure quite what that means. We're going to be done for another week. I apologize.
Notice
to
how
everybody
they
to whom we did
that
not get.
Reference.
No, they had no idea who the Smothers Brothers are. They're thinking, what are they, an indie band? Anyway, we're done for another week, and I want to thank Steve. I want to thank Dan. I want to thank Pat. I want to thank all these guys. We're done. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel, on the greatest computer show on the known universe, Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 58 minutes after the hour, and we be done. See you next week.